This podcast is sponsored by the Columbia Association, who invites you to attend a public work session on the Aquatics Master Plan, Tuesday, January 31st, 7 p.m. at Claret Hall in the River Hill Village Center. For more information, go to columbiaassociation.org/aquaticsmasterplan.
Happy New Year, and welcome to another episode of the Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. Joining us today is Cy Pommier, an urban design consultant, to chat with us a little bit about Columbia and its proposed redevelopment. But as always, we'd first like to take a look at some of the news making the headlines this week. Dennis, what do you have to get us started?
Well, happy Rubber Ducky Day.
What?
Today is National Rubber Ducky Day.
There is such a thing?
There is such a thing. You know,
and to the extent that there is such a thing, you would know.
I would know. Well, it's also Friday the 13th. I don't know. Have we ever done a show on Friday the 13th before? I think we have.
Is there an app that would tell us that?
Well, we'll get to that later, too. It's also Purple Friday. You're not wearing any purple today.
I'm not. But not that you can see.
But we're gonna address that later. We got some fan stashes here that we're going to have a little fun with later. But big weekend for the Ravens.
Big weekend. Yeah, wish them much luck.
Wish them much luck.
I'm concerned that Houston's not good enough for them to actually beat them.
Yeah, well, you know, we beat them once this year. So hopefully we'll beat them again. They're working with their third-string quarterback. And, you know, that's all I'll say for those football, for the people listening who don't like football. My daughter hates football. She doesn't want to hear me talk about it. So for those people, that's it. No more. Big news this week is, for me at least it was, Beverly Francis Gibson, who was once a guest on our show almost just about a year ago, she stepped down. She resigned from as executive director of the Columbia Foundation.
And she had taken over for Barbara Lawson, who had resigned after
19 years.
I was going to say almost 20 years as the head of the foundation.
Beverly was there for like almost four.
Almost 4 years, and there was an abrupt announcement the other day that she had resigned.
Abrupt is a good word. It was abrupt.
It was. A lot of speculation in town as to whether it was legitimately a resignation to pursue other professional aspirations, as she has suggested.
Professional opportunities.
Opportunities that are yet to be disclosed.
Yeah.
In any event, you know, I like Beverly. I wish her much luck. Not sure exactly what happened, but...
I'm not sure what happened. You know, usually there's a bit of a transition period, and this was rather abrupt, as you said.
I imagine the story will emerge as the weeks come.
I guess.
Another story this week is an interesting story. We recently had on Howard County Police Chief McMahon, and it's a shame that the story came
didn't
about
come out with you.
Yeah, there was a lot of things, actually, that came out during that time frame when we had him on.
We had murders.
But this story actually has to do with a drunk driving case that was recently thrown out by Howard County District Court Judge Sue Ellen Hantman.
Right.
And the case got thrown out because the defense attorney, Mark Muffoletto, a good friend of mine, actually, he was able to show that the police officer that made the arrest was actually participating in meeting quotas.
Responding to quotas, right.
And apparently there's a federal grant that was given to Howard County to fund the overtime of patrolmen, and the dollars are supposed to be used to target drunk and aggressive drivers. And supposedly the grant mandates an average of 2 to 4 citations per hour for each officer while they're working. And Mark Muffoletto was able to demonstrate that this particular officer and this particular arrest occurred as a result of trying to meet these quotas, and the judge threw out the case.
You know, I'll just say this. Katie Marjorie Quackenbush is one lucky girl.
Look, here's my take on it. If the woman was legitimately pulled over and she legitimately blew a .17, which
she was doing
twice,
38 on Main Street in Ellicott City.
She blew twice the legal limit. You know what? She should have been arrested and she should have been convicted. There's a separate issue in my mind that the police are engaging in meeting quotas, and I think that's a problem. And that's, I think, should be the subject of an investigation. I think if they're legitimately doing that, then I think there should be some repercussions. But the repercussions should not be that a drunk driver is let go.
Right.
Just my two cents.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, as I said at lunch, I think this is a case of Sue Ellen legislating from the bench. I mean, I think that she's... I think she overreached a little bit on this thing, quotas, because it's not real clear that the quotas were put forth if you read the article.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
But you know what concerns me at a higher level, not just this particular story, but the county, the state, they often come into federal dollars if they meet certain requirements. In this case, it's meeting quotas with certain amount of arrests or citations that are issued. In the school system, with the race to the top, we've seen that students need to perform at a certain level to ensure that they continue to get the federal funding that they want to further the education of Maryland students. Well, the problem is that, and we've talked about this before, you know, our kids are taught how to take the test that's about to be given.
Right.
Rather than learning everything in two or three chapters about a particular topic, they're given study guides, and these study guides are limited to things that they need to know for a particular test so that they pass the test so that they can continue to get federal funding.
Don't you refer to this list like the law of unintended consequences? I mean,
yeah,
the intentions were well, but yeah. And the same thing, as I said to you, last night I participated in my daughter's high school orientation session. She's in eighth grade. She's going to high school next year. And what struck me in the orientation session was a lot of time is spent on focusing on how we're going to get these kids to pass the HSAs. You know? And weren't the HSAs, the high school assessment, high school assessment test, weren't they set up to just make sure the schools were doing a good job?
Right. We should be teaching our kids, and then they should be taking the test to make sure that they've learned what they were supposed to learn, right. Not the other way around.
Yeah. You know, before I go on to my next thing on that, I want to go back to this Miss Quackenbush again. You know, you read the story, too. She's going back to court. She was doing
speeding.
Yeah, speeding on 71 on 29. Ms. Quackenbush is going to know the Howard County court system very well by the time she's finished.
She'll be back.
But while we were talking about schools and education, this was a fascinating week for Howard County education, I think. It was just last week that many in town were saying, got a board of election, a board of education election coming up. Three open seats, and only five people were running. It didn't even look like they're going to have a primary. It looked like there would be no interest. And, you know, it was a good chance Alan Dyer would get reelected because he's up for reelection. In the span of a week, we now have 15 candidates for three open seats.
You know, you and the press have made kind of a to-do out of how we went from a very small number to a very large number. But, you know, people, human nature is that you wait till the deadline.
You wait till the deadline.
Meet. You know, I think everyone just filed at the last minute. I don't think these were people that came out of left field that didn't plan on running. I think they just waited till the 11th hour to file.
I would give you that. I mean, with the old saying, nothing happens without a deadline. I mean,
you know, what I thought was funny, though, we talked in the show previously about the the commission that County Executive Ken Allman had set up, that was headed up by former State Superintendent Nancy Grasmick,
right,
to study ways to foster diversity within the Board of Education members. And that was obviously headed up by Nancy Grasmick, but in conjunction with Frank Turner, who was actually going to introduce the legislation,
Frank,
which was going to require that two members be appointed by the county executive. And this was intended to create greater diversity amongst the members of the board.
Right.
I think it's funny that amongst this pool, we actually do have three African Americans that are running.
20% of the candidate pool.
20%. And I haven't checked the numbers lately, but that's a pretty fair representation, I think, of what the African Americans represent in our country. So.
And then leave it to the electorate. Let's see what happens here.
Right, exactly.
But the good news is 15 candidates, that will help people pay attention. I think there'll be a lot of activity around that. Got a primary in April. For those of us who blog and write about it, it's a treasure trove of subject matter. So looking forward to it. And while we're on schools, is this yours?
You can take and run with the apps.
No, not the apps. Maryland number one. Remember, we were going to talk about that. It was announced this week that Maryland schools were ranked number one again in the nation. But what fascinated me about this story is that, and it's great. Kudos to the school systems and throughout the state to get this ranking. But the top rank was only a B+. So, you know, even when you're the best in the nation, we still got a ways to go with education. So.
Yeah, be interesting to take a look at that scale and look at exactly what do you need to do to earn an A?
Yeah,
maybe you actually need to teach the subject matter and not the test.
There might be something to set up with that.
So, we do have one guy at Athelton, a 17-year-old gentleman named Eric Liu, who is actually quite an app maven. He's out there writing apps.
Apps for the iPhone. Right?
And doing a tremendous job. Obviously, he does a little bit more than just learn what he needs to know for the test. He's done a great job.
He's 17 years old, right?
17 years old. He's written a number of apps. I think the most, the one that's gotten the most downloads is actually a quake app, which can tell you, notify you of any earthquake around the world, and it tells you actually what the magnitude of the earthquake actually was.
And, you know, we've had a couple of earthquakes here in Howard County. Could come in handy, you know? So
My guess is that may have actually prompted him to do it. I'm just speculating. But
you think?
You never know. So kudos to him. It's nice to have those kind of kids here in Howard County.
It is. It's a very interesting story, and congratulations to him. The other day, earlier this week, I sat in on a presentation by Anibon Basu, our rock star regional economist. I love listening to the guy.
He's the only economist that can actually get a crowd to pay attention.
Yeah, he gets you laughing. The guy, he presents very dry matter in a very entertaining way. But one of the things he talked about was the over-reliance of Maryland on government for jobs. And not just direct with the government, but serving the government. Defense contractors serving the government. Healthcare contractors serving NIH or FDA. Just all government-related is our major industry. And it's a double-edged sword. I mean, it's good. We have all these people. But when he threw up his chart that showed where the job growth has been in the last year and where the jobs have what's lost jobs. And the government is at the bottom of the cap. They've lost more jobs in government than we've gained in the private sector on the other side. It's kind of a dangerous thing for the state. And there's other issues with it, too. And it's the BRAC issue of, here we've got all these jobs coming to Fort Meade, ramping up. And I think the state estimated, or there was some study estimated we needed, was it $1.3 billion in traffic improvements to handle the increased number of people coming to Fort Meade? And we've only allocated like $50 million, something like that?
Which is nothing. I mean, nothing. Just scratching the surface.
Nothing. And you've got, despite what's already there, and, that's already been added, because the BRAC is actually over. I mean, the Defense Information Support Services Systems Agency is already up and running. They're in a new million-square-foot building out there at the fort. But there's 9,000 more jobs coming.
Well, and while federal dollars should flow to help the infrastructure to create, alleviate traffic problems, some of it is the state's problem because some of them are state roads.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the Transportation Trust Fund here in Maryland. Which has been raided repeatedly. You know, the word trust in my profession, it comes with a fiduciary duty.
Yeah, right.
It's a fiduciary duty that clearly our elected officials don't understand.
They don't follow. They raid it when they need the money.
They have. So clearly there's some needs for transportation improvements
right.
and infrastructure. But the trust fund has been raided the last several years, not only by our current Governor O'Malley, but also by Governor Ehrlich and Governor Glenn Denning. There's been a lot of raiding over
those three. It's been a political convenience.
It has. And now they're talking about raising the tax of gas to replenish that trust fund.
To replenish, and it wasn't just that. I mean, flush tax. Taking it from, they want to triple it,
And I love the one penny increase in the sales tax. It's just a penny.
It's 1%.
No. It's 40% since he became governor.
Yeah, three taxes, and that I'm sure there's more, but bing, bang, boom, tax is how they open the General Assembly with.
And on a local level, Ray Wax, who's our budget administrator here in Howard County, is predicting fairly flat revenues for the county. And has urged all the departments for kind of status quo budgets. So we're going to be looking at no new programs and no new jobs.
Well, Courtney would like to have a new program.
Well, Courtney's looking for an intern, right?
Well, she not just an intern. She wants to pay her intern.
So what Dennis is referring to, obviously, is the internships. So the county council right now does have unpaid internships.
I better be careful. Courtney doesn't like me right now, so I better be
you
careful.
Better be careful. You don't want to be in that position.
No, she's already mad at me, so I'll let you talk about Courtney.
I don't have anything bad to say about Courtney. I'm just reporting on the story. So Courtney's prepared to introduce some legislation to actually have paid interns in the county council's office. And right now there are unpaid interns, as there are at the county executive's office. But Courtney feels that this would be a good thing to do. A number of community groups, including People Acting Together in Howard, have asked the county to help with and are trying to encourage students to participate in government at a greater level, and she sees this as a way to accomplish that.
Is it just me, or does PATH seem to be flexing its muscles, political muscles, a lot lately? I mean, they were behind the women's only swim times at the Columbia Swim Center. They're behind this.
You really have to go there. We all know how I feel about that.
I just noticed a pattern. That's all.
All right, moving on. Columbia Redevelopment?
Columbia Redevelopment's in the news. Well, it's in the news as it should be because we are finally, after 5 years of, you know, deliberation ad nauseum, we have a plan. It's been voted on by the council last February, I believe?
Yeah.
To redevelop Town Center and to add density, add more housing units. And so now the first projects are on board. Earlier this year, General Growth announced, you know, that they're got their neighborhood design panels out. They want to put the first phase include 350 some apartments.
Was it only 5 years? I'm in my mid 40s now. I think I participated in the charrette back in when I was a teenager. Feels like just an eternity ago.
Possibly. But it's moving forward. Real projects, real things are on the board now. But this past week, General Growth, who hosts our fine show here in the mall, announced that they're also going to be participating in this first phase with a retail development. And from what I understand, I think next week is the public hearing where we're going to get the real, their story. But from what I've been able to ascertain, the plan is to take down the L.L. Bean store. Mm-hmm. Apparently, L.L. Bean has found the store is a little bit too large for what they want to do. They want to be in about half that amount of space. So they're going to take down that building and relocate L.L. Bean to a new lifestyle center that'll be kind of on the edge of the Macy's parking lot here at the Stair at Place, Little Patuxent entrance into the mall.
And a lifestyle center is sort of the modern version of calling it sort of an outdoor open design.
Yeah.
As opposed to an indoor contained retail.
It's a strip center with some whistles and bells.
Oh, come on. It's a little more than that.
I see our guest smiling. Well, he could talk about lifestyle centers when he chimes in. But, you know, it's exciting. We're getting plans in front of us on the same panel. Actually, two things happened, too. I moderated a panel for Leadership Howard County this week, and on the panel was John DeWolf. And John shared with the panel, or with the leadership class, that Howard Hughes hopes to have shovels in the ground by June. So, you know, this stuff is moving together. And he also shared another thing that I thought was rather interesting. He said Frank Gehry was in town. I guess he invited Frank out, and as he said Frank Gehry told him that he thought that he was being invited to hear that they were going to tear his building down, and was quite pleasantly surprised to find out that, no, in fact, they wanted to kind of go over their plans with him, which he apparently he blessed. He thought it was a good idea. But what a lot of people don't realize, and John made this clear to the panel, is that building needs a lot of work to the tune of almost $26 million. They're going to basically do some constructive they're going to basically demolish it in place and rebuild it in place. So all the interior is going to be gutted and it's going to be rebuilt. It's quite a project.
Hmm. Interesting.
But before we get to our guests, I just want to say thanks to our sponsor again for the show, the Columbia Association. The Columbia Association, the Howard County's, Columbia's Park and Rec Association, Parks and Rec Association, is the sponsor of show. And this week they want us to tell you about an upcoming public meeting of the Planning and Strategy Committee, where they'll be reviewing the Aquatics Master Plan. And that's going to be held on Tuesday, January 31st at Claret Hall. Did I say Claret? Claret? Claret's a wine, right? Claret Hall. in the village of River Hill. And that's at 7... Yeah, I'm sorry. Oh, I have it wrong. January 31st, 7 p.m. at Claret Hall in River Hill Village Center. Yeah, so you want to put that on your... If you're interested in the pools and what's going on, that splashdown and all that stuff has been in the news, put that on your calendar and go. And with that, why don't you introduce our guest?
Splashdown, we'll be back.
Well, yeah.
Cy Pommier, welcome. Thank you for joining us today. Cy is an urban design consultant, currently, I guess, working still for the downtown D.C. Business Improvement District and the Washington District of Columbia. Formerly a chief land planner for the Rouse Company, which actually developed Newtown, Columbia. So, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, nice to have a legend here joining us today who's actually helped create Columbia as we know it today. And you're obviously been asked to come back and participate in some of the redevelopment of Columbia. So we're eager to chat with you a little bit about that. But tell us what you're doing right now.
Great. Over the last, two or three years, we've been working closely with the CA board and the staff to try to really come up with a bold plan for improving Symphony Woods. Symphony Woods was a project that I came here to work on in 1969. The Mort Hoppenfeld, who was my boss, was excited about this great park in downtown. And in his encouraging me to come here, I thought, well, this is a great opportunity. Well, we got here and we realized there were lots of more important things, including building this building here, because first 2 years I was here basically worked on the development of this building and the improvements around it.
The mall.
The mall. Yeah. And so because there were so many other important things to do, we never really got around to looking at Symphony Woods as a downtown park. And so in 1999, our company that I was with was called Land Design and Research. We made an offer to CA to help plan that. We were going to give $25,000 worth of professional fees to help plan the park. Well, we got started on it, and then the CA board said, well, we really don't have any money to make the improvements, so we really don't know that we need you to do a plan.
Because so we're fixing splashdown.
Yes, right. So my partners and I basically said, well, we just won't spend the money because CA really doesn't seem to be in the mood. So I guess about 3 years ago, we found out that there was someone in the county that really wanted to kind of take all of the trees down and build a new library and a new CA headquarters and everything else. And there were three or four of us.
And roads through the park.
And major roads through the park.
Well, I wouldn't call them major, but...
Well,
but that's good.
For Columbia,
another road parallel to LPP.
Right.
And long and short of it is, we got together and we started talking about all these years we've been hoping and praying we were going to have a great park for the people of Columbia downtown, and it was all about to disappear. So we got together and developed our own plan. Went to the whole community. We had a big presentation to the community, and it was a unbelievable amount of support out there for doing something with Symphony Woods. Well, the really nice thing is that now that Howard Hughes has taken the responsibility for Meriwether Post, we are now in a collaborative process with them, and the planner architect that they have hired is a friend of 25 or 30 years from Boston.
It's Sasaki, right?
Sasaki. And we've been working very closely with them. And I think we're very close, within weeks, of having a master plan for both Symphony Woods and for Meriwether Post.
Let me jump in and ask you. You don't have a critical mass of people right now over in that area. How do you have a vibrant park that's populated by people...
When there's no people around.
When there are no people around. And how do you prevent it from becoming sort of a... frankly, like Central Park in New York on a much smaller scale, where crime becomes prevalent? How do you prevent that?
Well, there are quite a few activities that take place there, obviously, mostly during the summer months. But I've been involved in designing and implementing 55 parks, not only here in this country, but abroad. And I've seen a lot of places that nobody would go there. But once you created an amenity, we don't really have a first-class park in downtown. We've got some open space on the lakefront, which I guess is our best offering.
And it ain't much, let me tell you.
No, it's not. It's not. And I think the people in this community deserve a lot better. You know, we only have, we're talking about 10 acres of land in Symphony Woods that we're talking about improving. The land on the lakefront is the equivalent of 2 acres.
Right, these aren't big parcels.
So we're talking about, you know, 12 acres of parks to serve the people in this community. But they ought to be really quality parks. And we're talking the people that are involved with the Meriwether Post are interested in creating a really outstanding cafe. We think that food is really an important part. The cafe would be designed so that it faces the park by day, and then when there's an evening event, they would actually be open to the people coming to the various concerts.
Can I just say one thing here? That to me is the biggest adjustment that you've made since you started this. Because when it first came out, CA was going to do this cafe on their own, and then you and I talked.
Yep.
There'd be some kind of trailer that you would roll in the off season, and I was like, nobody's going to go to this cafe in the woods.
Right.
To tie it in with Meriwether, I mean it's
essential.
Now you got the formula for success.
Right, and it's also going to be moved out closer to where they have their current entrance.
Oh, good.
Instead of being kind of in 100 yards away from the parking, it'll actually be up there at the corner, where everyone will see it. And it could hopefully be a 12-month-a-year cafe.
So what kind of cafe?
Sandwiches? Are you familiar Yeah. Are you familiar with the one that's in the Sculpture Garden in Washington?
Sure.
Yeah, it's a spectacular space. It's all about small-scale food. It's no big meals or any of that nature. So but it's quality food, but in small portions.
Are we talking about like 5,000 square feet of cafe, or are we talking something smaller?
More like 3,000, probably.
3,000, okay.
Yeah, it's not a big building. Uh-huh. It's all about quality, not quantity. And, you know, I've seen these all over.
Now, do you envision a liquor license with this place, or is it just a...
I wouldn't think so.
Okay.
I wouldn't think so, no.
Just food.
But I've never even asked that question before.
I don't know. Did someone in the Sculpture Garden?
He'll send you a bill for that. Yeah. Suggestion.
Well, you know, I want to know. I don't know if there's a bar and everything.
No, but the truly good news is that there have been a lot of people have been critical of the fact that CA has not done a master plan for this much larger area called a neighborhood. Well, actually, it's really nice that Howard Hughes have stepped forward and said, you know, we're responsible for our piece of this project.
Right, the Warfield neighborhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, well, not the Warfield. I'm talking about
Merriweather, right.
The Merriweather Post right. area. So they've stepped forward, and it's mainly because of John DeWolf saying, you know, we need to have a plan where we're going.
Right.
And so they've been working closely with the president of CA, and I think that they're very close now to having agreement.
What do you think of John?
I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah. You've sat down and met with him?
Yeah, we've been with him 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
Yep.
What do you think the priority is? Is it Symphony Woods or is it the lakefront?
Well, the lakefront has some approval. If we could go ahead and make the improvements to the lakefront that we're talking about, it would be great. But
now, is Howard Hughes also participating in the lakefront?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. They're involved in both of them. And they have some pretty bold plans for the lakefront. So it's a really collaborative process.
Well, that's another neighborhood that they want to...
Yes, yeah. yes. And so we're working together on both of those projects. But I think the lakefront's going to take longer to implement because there's approvals that are required. You can't just do anything you want. The state has certain requirements that you meet. So my guess is it's an approval process of a year or two.
From the environmental perspective?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Will the bell tower ever come back?
I would hope, but I'd hope it would come back where it would be more usable to people. I'm familiar with a few bell towers.
Right.
I
miss the sound of the bells.
I mean, yeah, so do I. But I think they ought to be on the land, not out in the water. But
right. Yeah. Although I guess would it make a difference how the sound carries if they were on the water as opposed to the land? Or?
I doubt it.
Not substantially.
Probably the most successful were in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I spent a lot of time. And my personal friend put these bell towers in place. And every Saturday and every Wednesday afternoon, the children in the community come and play the keyboard.
Oh, cool.
And spectacular.
Yeah.
And it rotates all over the downtown area.
Paul said, you know, you're kind of a legend, but you're also, through this process, you've become a bit of a lightning rod. You've gotten a lot of criticism that CA kind of soul-sourced this to you. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, basically, there's a group of 5 people who come together who all worked for the Rouse Company during the period of 69 through the 70s.
And who was it?
Bob Tenenbaum.
Bob Tenenbaum, sure.
And myself, and Mike Reamer.
Uh-huh.
And Jervis Dorton.
Jervis, sure.
Yeah, that's 4. And then there's another fellow who's now in Baltimore, but still involved.
Who's the guy down in Baltimore? We can't talk about him? We don't really... We can't name his name? Okay.
Monk Askew.
Oh, Monk, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the 5 of us agreed a year or more ago that we would provide time and material. We would spend as much time as required at no cost. We're not looking to make
right.
money on this.
Uh-huh.
And so CA basically was asked if they would put forward some money to be able to hire people that might do beautiful sketches. A lot of the money that we've spent is on perspective sketches that none of us can do.
And you brought some of those with you today, right?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So, you know, to communicate properly, you have to have visuals that people can understand.
Sure.
Most people don't really read drawings very well. So we've been spending money on special drawings and on sketches. And I don't know. My guess is we've probably put in $30,000 or $40,000 worth of time that we haven't been paid for. So if somebody wants to criticize us, that's fine. But it's mainly because 4 out of the 5 of us live here. We've all lived here since the late 60s. And we care deeply about this place, and we don't think it's met its potential.
Right.
So... No.
Let me ask you a question. We've talked on the show before about all the people in Howard County that believe they know in their heart and soul what Rouse's vision
what
was.
What Jim Rouse would have
okay.
done.
So here you brought this group of 5 professionals together.
The old dream team.
Yeah, it's the old dream team. Do visions evolve And are you, are the five of you capable of taking Rouse's vision as you understood it and making it a modern day Rouse vision? Or do you need fresh perspectives, new blood? In other words, the size of today.
I think the spirit of Jim Rouse and the spirit of Mort Hoppenfeld and people like that is what lives on. I think that there are very few things that we see as being sacred, and I think that we're constantly having to deal with the realities of today. But there are some things that we care about as being protected. You know, we've been very vocal about trying to preserve those three key buildings at Wild Lake Village Center, because they are among the few buildings architecturally that really, really meant something to people at the time. But for the most part, I think that we're...
That battle's over, though, isn't it? Or is that...
I would hope not.
You're still fighting that with Kim Keller?
It's terrible. They want to tear down all three buildings. If they were being honest with the people, their whole goal is to tear everything down except for the CA facilities and build a housing project. That's their goal. I don't think they're being totally fair and honest.
Well, I mean, to their defense, I mean, they're looking at it as an asset and trying to maximize their value on the asset. I mean, I understand that. I mean, it's a business. I mean,
sure. They'll get the most money out of it if it can be all housing. That's their goal.
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely. That's the darling of Wall Street right now is multifamily housing.
Sure.
But you know, so if you're going to say preserve the, there's a question of compensation. You know, you want to preserve. Well, they should probably be compensated for that, wouldn't you say? Or
well, my point is they're talking about a lot of commercial development, which most of us don't think is ever going to occur.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, we don't think their plan's realistic at all. But time will tell. You know, it's one of those things that the marketplace really dictates what happens.
Absolutely.
We know that housing would be successful on that site, and most of us would like to see most of the site developed as a housing project. We don't really think they're going to get a drugstore and a lot of other new commercial.
Well,
but that's a distraction from what you were asking a question to.
He does that to me all the time.
Yeah, right. No, but I think that the five of us are all pretty contemporary in our thinking. We're not looking to try to protect anything. We're trying to build on what's here.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't... Maybe everybody in Columbia thinks our public space in the lakefront is great and that Symphony Woods is great. I mean, we got people fighting about the fact that we're going to cut down 50 trees.
I know. That's
ridiculous. And there's over 300 going to be left on that 10 acres. You divide 8 or 10 acres into 300. That's 30 acres, 30 trees per acre that are going to be left when we're getting done.
And we've done nothing to protect those trees over the years. I mean, it's a natural woods wouldn't have the ground cut like it is in there. You know, so there's some trees that were sick.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of junk trees in there. They're not all holly. My guess is that 25% of the trees are quality, and the other trees are really trees that are probably nearing their life end. You know.
And if you take care of them, you'll help the other trees in the long run.
Absolutely.
Right.
You mentioned that you've designed 45 or 55 parks
55
around the
parks.
World.
Mm-hmm.
You've been involved with a lot of different projects. There's a lot of frustration in Howard County and in Columbia how long it's taking to get this off the ground, to actually put a shovel in the ground and to see something. Is this typical, or do we have a hard time getting out of our own way?
It's totally different than it was when I came here. You would go and you'd meet with the planning board and the planning staff in the county, and 3 months later you'd be under construction on a project.
Right.
I mean, the process has become very complex. And I guess you could argue there are good reasons people felt they were worried about overbuilding and overdensifying and things like that. So a lot of the controls and process that have been put in place are making it much more cumbersome. If I were a developer now, I think I'd go crazy. I mean, seriously.
But it's not.
It's
not.
Encumbering. It's discouraging people probably from investing.
I mean, forget the processes that have been put into place as a county, you know, for the western part of the county or Ellicott City or whatever. On top of that, it just feels like this whole redevelopment in Columbia, it's not even just that the approval process is so long. It's just we can't decide what we're going to do. And, you know, Rouse splits off and GGP and Howard Hughes. And now we have the new Rouse and... What's the mall doing? What's CA doing? It just seems like we can't get out of our own way to make anything happen, to the frustration, I think, of a lot of people.
Well, I think part of it is I don't think we have a process that's open enough. I don't really believe we're communicating. My favorite word is not competition, but working together in a collaborative process. I think we need to really improve. One of the reasons I'm really excited about Howard Hughes is they have come along at a time that collaboration is finally beginning to happen. We need to be far more open. The community, we ought to be having a community meeting every 2 or 3 months, letting the community know that we're saving 300 trees and we have to take 50 trees down to create a great park. I mean, the fact that we got people running around saying, you can't cut, I have a woman that I've talked to for an hour the other day, you can't cut down those trees, they'll destroy the park. You got to cut some trees down to put the paths and the walks and things in place.
But is this the vocal minority?
It is, absolutely, but they end up
and
always...
And Columbia created that, Jim Rouse created that in Columbia, that everybody had a say. You know, I mean, yeah. Didn't he really sigh? I mean,
yeah. He wanted to.
Everybody, he would even take those calls, right? And yep. He would talk to that lady about those trees.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah. And the sad part is that if a tree dies there now and falls down, nobody even knows.
But I have to
tell
you.
Well, this lady wouldn't even know about these trees because she probably hasn't been to Symphony Woods in 15 years.
Exactly.
But part of what I'm trying to say is that if we do a better job of communicating publicly and we share our ideas openly, I think we'll have much more support. We had an outcrying of support 3 years ago when we presented our initial plans, okay? People were really excited. There has not been a public presentation of consequence since then.
And whose fault is that?
Well,
who's responsible for that communication plan? Is it a lack of leadership at the top of the county?
Or is there too many people that it falls under?
I think it's partly because I don't think that we've had enough collaboration behind the scenes with Howard Hughes coming on board has really been important. His general growth really didn't want to care. They weren't interested in talking about Symphony Woods, but now we've got an owner that really does care. So maybe it's the economy has changed. We now have a more positive economy, and we've got a group of people wanting to work together, and I think we have the ability now to go public in the next couple of months and get what I call the real community support that we need. And then I think things will happen. I think the county might actually be pushing to get it done. We've got a county that's, I think, really not maybe interested in seeing that park developed. I mean, really.
Is Columbia Association realistic about the costs associated with doing this right?
Well, we have a pretty accurate cost on the first phase, and then I think what my experience is in a lot of cities is that once you get the infrastructure in place, the walks, the lighting, the benches, and the amenities, including the fountain, you get a lot of private people coming forward and saying, I'd like to contribute money for a new piece of sculpture or for an outdoor play area. I think the private sector will come forward and participate.
And actually, there's already been there's been an anonymous donation to the park already, hasn't there?
Right.
Yeah, I remember that happened shortly after...
Thank you, Dennis. We appreciate that.
Yeah, right. But shortly after that, they announced the state bond money, that somebody right. stepped forward and said that they were going to pony up some dollars. We don't know who that is. You probably do.
It's anonymous for a reason.
It's anonymous.
Enough.
Okay. All right. Enough. I lost my train of thought. Howard Hughes and General Growth were once one and the same. Did you ever work with Greg Hamm?
A little bit, yes. I met with him maybe a dozen times.
And you find a different management style then for
well,
him?
Well, no, I think the difference is that Greg really didn't have a lot of implementation experience. He was not somebody who'd been involved in implementation. I think the difference is that when you get one man like John DeWolf comes to town who's been around long enough to know what development's all about and how it happens, things happen.
He's ready to get building.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to think that part of my strength is having had a lot of experience. I do know a great park when I see it. You know,
You've seen a few.
I lived in Europe for 5 years and spent most of my time working in the United Kingdom. And I know a lot of great parks. I didn't design them all, but I do know what a great park looks like, and I know how to get it built.
Now, you bought with you today, and it's kind of funny because of a podcast, we can't show them. But you have a bulging portfolio of presentation boards.
Right.
Are they available on the web anywhere that people can see these designs?
Not for the most part.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I would hope so.
Yeah.
I would hope so.
You talk about getting the word out and getting more people.
Get it out there.
Yeah.
One of the criticisms that we have received a lot of, and we've had to defend ourselves, I say defend, a group that I'm associated with, small group, right. have had to defend the plan because CA has felt that they couldn't really talk too much about sculpture and play areas and all these other things because that's not in the current budget. So the community, some people in the community have said, you know, you really don't have a vision. And that's kind of hard because I think we have a vision, but we have never communicated it. The general public don't understand.
You haven't been allowed to.
We haven't really been encouraged to do that. Right. And that's a weakness. Mm-hmm. And I think it's partly because of maybe not enough experience, senior experience in terms of CA staff.
Right.
Si, we've limited most of our conversation to talking about the Symphony Woods park, proposed park, and the lakefront. You've surely had an opportunity to take a look at some of the other proposed redevelopment plans in Columbia. What is your thought on those?
Well, I think, for the most part, I think that the maybe the only thing that really has great market potential is the residential. I seriously doubt that there's a lot of market for major office buildings. You know, in the program, there's an ability to build 15 or 20 new office buildings in downtown. I can't figure out where those would occur unless maybe behind the Meriwether Post. But the office market, I think, and one of my closest friends was in charge of retail marketing for the Ross Company for 30 years. And, you know, he says, honestly, I don't really think there's a market for a lot of office buildings. There's a market for maybe a new hotel somewhere down the line, which I hope comes.
In retail?
In retail. But, you know, there are people who would question how much retail.
Sure.
Well, I'm more worried about losing a couple department stores. That's what I'm worried about.
Right, right.
So you think the Maple Lawns and the Gateways are going to continue to be the homes of office space, and there won't be a huge surge of new office occupancy in town center?
I think most of the office buildings are going to occur closer to 95. There's also another big project down in 95 that is...
Conterra.
Yeah, Conterra. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a huge project. And I think that transportation and accessibility and all that is going to be a big issue. You come to try to build in downtown Columbia, you've got to build a major parking garage and other costs associated with it. So my guess is the office market is a big question mark. The housing market I don't think is going to be an issue. I don't build as much housing as we have land to accommodate it. But I just don't see other parts of that program being very... It's in there to be built if we can find the market. But at the end of the day, it's all about where people want to invest their money.
Town Center Columbia, from a residential housing perspective, has become, in Harrod County, the location of some of the lower-priced housing in the community. Presumably, with the redevelopment of the residential market, we're going to be looking at higher-end condominiums and things like that. What's going to happen to, going back to the old Rouse vision of having, you know, maybe the rich and the poor living side by side and people of all walks of life living together? What's going to happen to the existing lower-income housing that's pervasive in a lot of town center or in the surrounding area?
I think it's difficult to really project that. And fortunately, it's not in the town center. It's on the edge of the town center.
Right.
But if it's well-maintained, it'll probably end up continuing to provide for a need that we have in any given community. We have a need for that housing. I think the key is maintenance. I'm obviously worried about long-term maintenance because so much of the housing that was built in Columbia in early days was a lot of...
T-111.
A lot of T-111. And if it's not well-maintained...
I could tell you were searching for something diplomatic to say.
Yes, right. Yeah, right.
Polybutylene piping.
So, you know, I think in the town center itself that we're going to get mainly middle-income and higher-income housing. Right.
Well, of course, they have that the housing trust fund they got established, too.
Right.
Before they get going. I think they got to write a check for $1.5 million.
Yeah. Big bucks.
Right.
So. That's a challenge to be able to provide for the people who need to be housed in this community, and I have confidence that we'll somehow solve that. Jim Rouse believes, obviously, in it, and I think most of the people who moved to Columbia believe that that was important.
Well, Si, after this short chat, I've got a renewed sense of optimism about what's going to happen with Symphony Woods and hopefully Lakefront down the road. We thank you for what you're doing with your dream team, and appreciate you coming by today.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing these things come to fruition, too.
Yeah, well, we appreciate your support, because I think one of the things that's really critical is we do need to get out there and share all of this with the community abroad.
Yeah, we'd like to see these, maybe even to Hokomoja can get you some of these, get these drawings online. I mean, that's a first step to getting a lot of people on board.
Great. We'll do it.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Have a nice weekend. All right, so my rant for the day. You know, it's a rant that I've had on a personal level, and many of my close friends have heard me rant about this, and it has to do with Facebook posters. You know, there's a lot of great uses for Facebook. I love Facebook. I learn a lot about friends that I've lost contact with, and I love hearing about what's going on in their world. But you know what, fellow Facebook friends, other people out there who use Facebook, let me tell you something. Before you post something, I want you to think really long and hard about whether anybody really cares about what you're about to post. The absurdity of the things that are being posted out there is at an all-time high, and we need to collectively curb the posting on Facebook to legitimate things. If you're insecure, if you feel like you don't have any friends and you need some, go to a networking event. You're not going to make friends by posting things into a big black hole and expecting people to become your friend. That's my rant.
Well, that about wraps up yet another episode of And Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scowney, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Columbia Association, and our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the Internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on January 27th, with a lively discussion of the current session of the Maryland General Assembly. Joining us on the right will be Hoco Loco political activist Chris Oxenham, and for the left, Roger Kaplan, CEO of the Kaplan Group. We hope you join us. Rubber ducky, you're the one. You make bath time lots of fun. Come on, Paul. No?
Vo-vo-vo-dee-o, rubber ducky, joy of joys. When I squeeze you, you make noise. Rubber ducky, you're my very best friend, it's true. Oh, every day when I make my way to the tubby, I find a little fella who's cute and yellow and chubby. Rub-a-dub-dubby.